Hello, and welcome to an Inside College Hockey podcast recorded Wednesday, November 5th, 2008. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, Inch podcast host and ECAC hockey senior writer at Inch. We will be joined tonight by a full complement of Inch writers from across the nation, and we'll work our way east to west this time during introductions, starting with Jeff Howe, our Hockey East writer. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, Glenn, how are you?
I'm good. What hockey sweater are you donning tonight?
I'm wearing my Middlesex Community College sweater.
Attaboy. Probably.
The one that I wore during our national championship game back in 2004.
Where was that Frozen Four held?
That one was in Lake Placid.
Oh, good. Good deal.
Good deal.
Next up, Mike Eitelbiss, Inch columnist and editor based in mid-Michigan. Boss, how are you tonight?
Not bad at all.
Sweater that you are donning?
Well, I have to admit, I was outside burning leaves tonight, so I've actually got a sweatshirt on, and it's the University of Wyoming.
Attaboy.
Sorry.
That's cool. No problem. James V. Dowd, Midwest, Windy City, CCHA senior writer. Hello, James.
Hey, how's it going, Gladdy?
It's going great. Wearing sweater tonight?
Yeah, I've got my number 2 Duncan Key Chicago Blackhawks shirt for Michigan State Spartan, at least for a short time.
Attaboy. CCHA and hometown Blackhawks. And finally, we'd like to welcome in Jess Myers. Jess, of course, covers the WCHA. And hello, Jess.
Greetings, everyone.
What is your sweater of choice tonight?
In honor of Wisconsin's first win of the season on November 1st, I'm wearing the hated Big Bucky pajama top sweater tonight.
Oh,
so
yeah,
big
that
red.
That is hated.
That is the worst sweater in history.
I'm envied by no one right now.
That is correct, though.
Just like always.
Wow. Consistency is the key. And here in Central New York, I am donning the 1993 Toronto Maple Leafs Peter Zezel number 25 sweater.
Oh.
Hard to believe it was 15 years ago that magical cup run was thwarted by horrible officials and Wayne Gretzky, but that's all in the past.
Hard to believe you can still fit in it.
That's why you buy them big.
Did Felix Potvin's acne ever clear up? Do we know?
I don't know. Well, enough of the niceties and greetings. Let's try to be serious. Surely you can't be serious. We will talk about Hobie Baker candidacy and one particularly intriguing candidate from the first few weeks of the season, and that is Air Force forward Jacques Lamoureux, who has 19 points already. Air Force is nationally ranked, off to a perfect 8-0-0 start. I guess we'll start with Mike, who has done a lot of our Hobie columnizing and track learning and is a former Hobie voter. Can a guy from Atlantic Hockey win this, and is this the guy to do it?
Well, I think that absolutely a guy from Atlantic Hockey can win this. And he's got a few things working for in his favor. One is the fact that, you know, Air Force isn't kind of this out-of-the-woodwork program anymore. You know, they've been to a couple NCAA tournaments. They've been very competitive in their NCAA tournament appearances. We've seen a couple years ago Eric Ain get to the final three in the Hobie race, and you know, people recognize that last name from his brother's fine play at North Dakota in goal. So yeah, I think he can do it, and you know what, he's got the numbers to back it up. And I don't care who you're playing against, or you know what you may or may not think about the level of competition that Air Force is playing in, but you know, 11 goals in 8 games, 19 points in 8 games, you're doing something right. And, Yeah, I think he's got to be right up there. I mean, I think if we were putting out a Hobie tracker right now, he'd definitely be in the top three. I have no questions about that.
I agree. Jess, what? It's funny enough going back, and unfortunately, you don't want to compare people strictly to what they've done, you know, what their brothers have accomplished in the past. But one of our most popular activities last season was a napkin where we said caption this with JP Lamoureux in a photo that was taken, I believe, at the Final Five. And is that name really going to help him? And what was the general Western opinion of North Dakota's Lammy over the past couple of years?
Well, you know, as the season played out, he was definitely one of the better goalies in college hockey last year, and definitely one of the better goalies in the WCHA. How that will affect his brother, that reputation will affect his brother, being that they play, you know, polar opposite positions, I don't know. Now, I know we're kind of gender specific here, but since we're talking about the Lamoureux family, let's not forget the two sisters, Jocelyn and Monique, who are both freshmen at the University of Minnesota and are playing for the Gopher women's team. They are both within the top 10 scorers in the WCHA Women's League right now, too. So talk about some hockey bloodlines. You know, and their father played for the University of North Dakota back you know, a couple decades ago. That's a family that knows what it's doing when it puts its skates on.
That is true. That is true. I think maybe what I was trying to get at a little bit, and it was poorly worded, I think J.P. Lamoureux's personality, his affability, I was impressed in covering the Fighting Sioux during the NCAA tournament last season. It's kind of a welcoming, open, you know, friendly sort that that people can identify with, and that may serve his brother well as possibly interviews start to mount and attention starts to mount. Obviously, most everyone, if not absolutely everyone, at the service academies has such a great value system and is so well grounded and disciplined and does things the right way. So those are all interesting.
You talk about some real gentlemen. I mean, to interview the guys, you know, last year like I did from Air Force and from Army. You know, Eric Eanes, one of the better, you know, soft-spoken, you know, friendly guys I've ever dealt with, and just you know, a good guy, all-around good guy.
Indeed.
You know, the other thing that I want to throw in there that helps, and I think that, again, this goes back to Eanes' candidacy 2 years ago, is that, you know, we really got a sense not only of, you know, how good a player he was, but also the kind of life that these guys live. I mean, it's not just going to class and playing hockey. I mean, it's going to ridiculously hard classes, getting up at the crack of dawn, and, you know, living this regimented lifestyle, in some cases, you know, the upperclassmen, you know, assume leadership roles within these academies, and then going to be a hockey player for X hours a day, and then going back and, you know, eating with everybody and, you know, doing your homework and going to bed at 10 o'clock or whatever the curfew time is. You know, I think that when Eanes' candidacy, when Eanes was kind of in that mix a couple years ago, I think we got a greater appreciation for it. I mean, we know how grueling, you know, a college hockey season can be just in terms of length. And to be living this kind of lifestyle, a very demanding lifestyle, you know, mentally, physically, academically, it makes it all that more impressive.
Absolutely. And also that tie-in with Hobie Baker's life and history and his service in the Air Force as well, revealed prominently during the Eric Eanes Hobie chatter from back in the day. Plus, we'll move off of this very shortly. I want to point out one more thing that you said at the top about Air Force and who they've played. You know what? They're not lining up every weekend against Minnesota and Colorado College and Boston University and New Hampshire and Michigan State. Understand that. but they can only play the teams, and this is something I always harp on as we get maybe into later November and early December. People talk about strength of schedule and who they've played. Listen, they can only play who's on their schedule. They can't go out in January and say, oh, you know what, we're pretty good. Can we come up to Mariucci and play a couple? They can't do that. And what they've done is absolutely controlled every game they've been in, taking care of their own business. You know, they had one overtime win at Sacred Heart on the road against a pretty good team that's probably going to finish in the top five of Atlantic Hockey. Swept Bemidji State, swept American International, blew out Bentley twice. You know, they're taking care of business. There's no doubt. There's no mulligan. There's no problem. Air Force is getting the job done, and Lamoureux is a big reason for that.
Circle Thanksgiving weekend on your calendar. Air Force at home against Colorado College, Air Force at Denver, Friday and Saturday. You want a measuring stick? You got it.
There it is. There it is. Well, let's talk about some upperclassmen and Hobie efforts so far. Two guys with some similar stories. Both were very, very good players as underclassmen. Missed most or all of last season due to injury. Play at prominent programs. And we're talking about Ryan Stoa with the Minnesota Golden Gophers and on the East, Brock Bradford with the Boston College Eagles. These guys have stepped into the lineup as the veteran seniors that they're expected to be and really, really led the way with their performance on the ice, especially when teams lost significant production due to early departure and pro signings. Rook, I guess we'll start with Brock Bradford. How are things going for him and the Eagles so far?
Bradford's off to a great start. He's, I think, in the top three or four in Hockey East in total points. And, I mean, it couldn't have been a better story for him. He's a good kid who just really had two unfortunate and unrelated broken arm injuries last year that cost him all but five games of the season. He spent all of last season on the sidelines, but at every single game, and in the locker room in between periods as an extension of the coaching staff. And he was in coaches' meetings during the weeks to leading up into practices and after practices. And his teammates have said that he's a smarter player for it. He's more cerebral on the ice. He's able to read defenses a little better. He's always finding himself in the right spot. And Ben Ferriero told me earlier this season that Bradford has never missed a defensive assignment this season, too. So, I mean, that's saying something. In terms of his offensive skill, which is, you know, undoubtedly going to put him into the Hobie discussion, he's a mix, I think, of a Nathan Garvey and a Ben Ferriero, in the sense that he's a playmaker, he's dynamic, you know, he's quick, and he's talented around the net like Garvey was, and he's got an explosive shot like Ferriero does. He's going to end up, I would have to imagine, with 40 points this season, maybe even 50. And the other thing about him is, and you saw it this weekend when they played Merrimack, he scored the game-tying goal in third period and then won it in overtime. If you look at the box scores, Brock Bradford doesn't just accumulate points when the game's over or score a bunch of goals at the beginning of games or just pile on assists because he's on a great line. If you look at the box scores, it seems like almost every single one of his goals or his assists ties the game or puts BC ahead or ends up as the game-winning goal when the night's over. So he scores at key moments. And I think, you know, just like you were saying before, he missed most of last season. And that, if he's under consideration at this point a few months from now, that's going to help his candidacy.
Jess, on the other side, Ryan Stoa.
Stoa played one game last year. He played in a win over RPI. Second game of the year, he was taken out by a Michigan player. Blew his knee, missed the entire season. Came back, and talking to him in the preseason, he told me actually the biggest problem with coming back was the mental side of it. He was in good shape physically, but he said he admitted stepping on the ice that first time was a challenge. A lot of stuff going on in your head, especially when, you know, you've maybe never had a serious injury like that before and having to recover from one. With that said, he's played in six games. He's got six goals. He's on the Gophers' second line. Alongside, he's on the wing. Jay Bearball's on the other wing, and Jordan Schroeder, the very talented freshman from Prior Lake, Minnesota, is centering that line. And that's been the key so far for the Gophers. 4-0-2 start, and that group, along with some help from Mike Carmen, another upperclassman, but that's why they're doing what they're doing. And I am very much looking forward to this weekend. New Hampshire comes into Mariucci Arena and seeing how that matchup plays out with the way New Hampshire's scoring goals as well.
Well, those are guys to watch.
You know what, real quickly, I didn't know this, but when you said it, Jess, that Stowell got hurt against Michigan, the first time Bradford got hurt was against Michigan, too, so even more of a parallel with their injuries last season.
In the icebreaker.
Interesting.
Right.
In the icebreaker, yeah. Interesting. Well, in St. Paul last year.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. Good deal.
That was also when BC lost those two guys under mysterious circumstances that never came back.
Oh, yeah, we all remember that.
Oh, yeah.
An event-filled weekend.
Yeah, it was.
But guess what? Things turned out okay
for
Boston College in the end.
I think they'll take
they
it.
Did.
They recovered.
Yeah, it's fine. James, time to talk a little bit about CCHA. We can't get out of the Hobie talk without updating certainly that conference. And it's been a little bit of a quiet start, but maybe that's a good thing if you're a goalie, and Jeff Lurg is off to a good start already, proving that he's one of the best in the nation.
Yeah, absolutely, and it couldn't come at a better time for Michigan State, because that's a team that's, you know, really struggling in schools right now. You know, Lurg's goals against average right now is a little bit less than 0.5. He was able to win one shootout that he faced. He gives his team confidence, and really I think he's in a good position to continue this kind of success all year long and keep his team in games even when they're not scoring goals. The pressure's off him a little bit. They've got the freshman Palmisano in. He was first start, and they won a shootout at Western Michigan this weekend. And so, you know, not Jeff Lurg competitive, isn't capable of winning every night. You know, maybe he can focus on, you know, he can take on a bit of a leadership role and kind of diversify his position on the team. And I think that's a really good position, because the Spartans are off the top group in the DHA, and they're going to need him to play, and that every time you talk to anybody who plays for Michigan State, they look at any time you talk to anybody around the CC, that's the goalie that you're going up against.
All right, and well, Aaron Palushai has been, I guess, the other big name out of the CCHA so far. He was Player of the Month.
Yeah. You know, Aaron has really impressed me. You know, really good freshman year here, and there are a lot of questions at Michigan about who's going to take over for Kevin Porter and Chad Clark and Matt Pacioretty. And him and Louis Capito have really stepped up so far. They're kind of the opposite story at Michigan State, where their defense hasn't been so particularly killing, and their power play has left a little desired. But, you know, Palooza got, I think, 14 points so far, 7 or 8 goals. Cap Russo's right in, but you can really see, especially with a guy like Mark Matera out, Chris Summers has stepped into a leadership role, but also Palusha is only a sophomore, stepping up as somebody his teammates can count on. That is a big week for him.
Well, we'll certainly get into this, and I guess going back to Lurg a little bit and mentioning another returning Hobie finalist from last year, a top 10 guy, is Princeton's Lee Jubenville. And we'd love to tell you what he's done this year, but Princeton's only played one game. He had a goal and then went over Brown. Did not play the following night in an exhibition contest, but Princeton has Cornell and Colgate coming in to Baker Rink. Again, there's that name again, Hobie Baker. And that's a Friday and Saturday. Both games are 4 p.m. starts for the Tigers. And we'll see what happens there. A good find things out game on Friday, a happy hour game, 4 o'clock, so nobody has any excuses. The game is on ESPNU, and you can catch the Tigers and Cornell Big Red. Many of the league's best players are involved in that one. Next, we want to talk a little bit of pro hockey with, of course, a college slant. And we were looking at NHL rosters today and found 10 guys who are currently on NHL rosters that played college hockey last year. That includes Kyle Okposo with the Islanders. The other names, you know. I mean, Ben Bishop, Andreas Nodal, Jack Hillen, Ryan Jones, Kyle Okposo, TJ Oshie, Kevin Porter, Blake Wheeler, Kyle Turris. These guys are very high draft picks in most cases, with the exception of Hillen, who is an undrafted free agent and is with the New York Islanders. And then the last guy is Jesse Winchester, who played 4 years at Colgate and was an undrafted free agent. A lot of teams were very interested in his services last year, and he opted kind of surprisingly to some to go with Ottawa, and he stuck. He stuck with the big team. He's playing on a line with Daniel Alfredson. Bus, what does this say about kids who may be in a similar situation that can call their shots? I mean, here seems to be a player, Jesse Winchester, who very, very good college player, an all ECAC hockey type guy, but he found the right place for him and the right lineup that he could crack. Sometimes it might not be just about chasing the biggest paycheck.
No question, and I think you kind of, I think if you look at a number of cases with free agent signings, sometimes you find, we've seen, you know, especially recently, post-lockout, where college free agents have become we've seen more NHL teams go that route just because of financial purposes. You know, it's a way to save some money. You know, Winchester is obviously a great example of picking the right situation. He fits in with the style that Ottawa likes to play. You know, another guy that I think of that, you know, made the right decision was Brian Lurg from Michigan State, who signed with Edmonton. I mean, you know, he's a good skater. Edmonton likes to play that kind of, you know, they like to skate a lot, get the puck up and down the ice, and a young team, and they seem to use a lot of forwards throughout the course of the season because of they always seem to have a bunch of guys dinged up for some reason. I don't know why that is, but you know, I think this is one of the after effects of the lockout is that, you know, some of the teams, you know, you just can't go out and sign a guy to fill a spot. You can't go out and get a veteran to plug a gap or plug a hole. You've got to find, you can go to the college ranks and maybe pick up a guy who's 21, 22, 23, a little more mature than a kid that may be a draft choice or somebody out of the major junior ranks, you know, typically fairly responsible two-way players, typically a little bit more physically developed, and more of a more experience against, you know, bigger, more mature, more rugged players. And I think that, you know, I keep wondering, you know, when is this, when are we going to quit seeing these guys just make the leap right into the NHL out of college without, you know, spending any time in the minor leagues or the American Hockey League? And I think for all these reasons, I don't think that trend's going to stop anytime soon.
Yeah, we've said it time and time again. When college players come out of college, they're ready to play. You know, they know the game. They know their roles. It's not just throw the puck out 80 times in a season and play a million games and score 120 points and get your name in the paper. And I think pro teams are realizing that more and more.
I think you hit on another key point too, is knowing your role. And I think a lot of college guys, and I don't, you know, it's not an indictment against guys from other leagues who you know, made other trips or journeys to the NHL, but I think you see a lot of college guys who are willing to, you know, play the role as a checker or to, you know, be a defensive forward or to be a defensive defenseman or do those little things in order to stick on a roster because you know, their entire college career those things have been emphasized of doing the little things and you know, those lessons stick with them.
Yeah, and that always makes a favorable impression in training camps, especially.
Mm-hmm.
As a fan, too, you know, as hard as it is to lose guys early, you hate to see a good player decide to take off, you know, a Thomas Vanek or something. But I think it's a little more palatable to see a guy leave early if he jumps right to an NHL job.
Well, even if he doesn't. I mean, Nate Kirby's in the American League. He's got, I think, 7 goals in his first 8 games. You know, what's he going to do in college hockey this year?
Yeah. And dominate, same with a season ago with Teddy Purcell.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
And with in Purcell's case, especially, you know, he was one of those older guys who was 20 or 21.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He kind of had a great freshman season. There's no reason for him not to strike when the iron's hot.
Yeah. Trevor Smith.
And you talk about another guy who's in a good situation, Teddy Purcell. I know he's not up right now. He's in the American Hockey League, but, you know, there's a young team and kind of trying to find their identity, and he's going to get a shot.
Yeah. Fans feel betrayed. Go ahead, Rook.
If he stays at Maine, I mean, he's not dumb. He's looking around and seeing all the graduations and the departures that were happening going into last year. I mean, the team was going to be a shell of its former self. There wasn't going to be a Lelier and other guys like that who were going to help him become a better player. I mean, he was basically going to be doing it on his own up at Maine. His stock was up. He's a terrific player. That was never going to change, but, you know, his stock was up, and he was going to get the money, and it's very, very hard to argue with Teddy Purcell leaving.
Yeah, fans feel betrayed. Coaches have to make some adjustments, certainly in how they build their lineup and build their roster. But, you know, what can you say? You know, Eric Johnson, stay 4 years in college hockey. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's pretty selfish if you think about it.
There's more to it. I mean, and that's what you want to. That's what you want to see, I think, in the long run. I mean, same thing. Justin Abdelkader. Tim Kennedy last year, among, you know, dozens and dozens. Of course, there are a lot of the stories that don't work out, you know, where a kid maybe makes a move too early, and you see a lot of those too. We're not saying every case is successful, but the successful ones make you feel the best, I guess.
You also have to look in. You can weigh the other factors too, like going to class and doing schoolwork. You know, there are a lot of people who don't like going to class and doing schoolwork. And if somebody's going to offer you $500,000 or $1 million to turn pro and leave all that added work behind you that you may not need, you know, a lot of people would be fools to turn that down.
Yeah, you know what? Sociology 208 is still going to be available in 6 years.
Right.
The opportunity to chase a dream you've had since you were 5 years old might not be there very long.
Matt Green, I know, really struggled with the idea of walking away from the academics at North Dakota. When they asked him what his major is, and he said, "I'm just here to play hockey."
Nice. Yeah, he's honest.
Some guys do. There's a guy a couple of years ago at Michigan, Mike Brown, that's worked out pretty well for him. He was a guy where everybody sat back and they were like, "Hey, why is he leaving early?" You know, he left at the same time that Al Montoya and Jeff Tambellini did, and everybody's kind of, does he really have what it takes? But, you know, it's worked out pretty well for him because I always got the sense, just like Jesse just said about the guy in North Dakota, where class wasn't his priority, and now he's playing in the NHL, so obviously it was the right decision for him. So it just works out that way for some people.
Yeah, you can't paint with a broad brush.
You mentioned the rare case of guys leaving too early. Let me ask this. In the case of a guy like Junior Lessard, who won the Hobie and really hasn't turned that into an NHL career, could you make the case that he left too late? Would he have benefited leaving after his junior year?
Well, I don't know. It depends what your goals are. Was he going to play 10 years in the show if he stayed or left or whatever? Probably not. I mean, if he hasn't, you know, would he have maybe gotten a better look in camp or had more name, you know, recognition,
yeah,
possible, but you're going to be what you're going to be. And hey, look how long it's taken Mike Motto. He's a regular on the Devils' blue line now.
Yeah, a decade later.
Yeah, so you don't know. Everyone's got a different path. So,
and
anyway,
you know, a lot of it is just falling into the right situation.
Oh yeah.
And falling, you know, catching on with an organization that's, you know, the organizations that are open-minded and kind of can see beyond the obvious, I think. Kind of get a gauge for intangibles. You know, a guy we talk about a lot, Dustin Penner, great example.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of that, like the right organizational situation, too, a lot of people have asked me, should Mark Matera have left early? Is this guy crazy for staying a fourth year in Michigan? This is the example of why, he could have been off perhaps in the AHL or the NHL making some money, and now he's out for this year, and hopefully he'll be all right in the long run. But, you take a look at Anaheim. They're a team that was ready to be patient with him. They're a team right now that has a lot of veterans on the blue line, but aging guys and guys whose contracts are coming up. So staying for his senior year really looked like the right decision, because he might have been able to make a jump directly to the NHL next year. Obviously, it's not going to work that way, but just like the point that was just made, it's all about the organizational situation you're in.
Yeah.
That is a great point. I think Matera, looking at kind of the kind of player he is, and granted, he got hurt, and kind of, in hindsight, you can say, well, he should have done this, he should have done that, but, they still would have been a pretty, Michigan's still a really good team, and, he would have been, the unquestioned leader of the team, and I think that experience for him, to be the man and the guy that, the guy that's wearing the C and having that role on this team, he would have greatly benefited from, because, you look at that roster, and you got guys like Pronger and Niedermeyer and Solani, and, these kind of, leadership guys aren't getting any younger. I mean, they're going to have a void. And I think that, that experience would have, for Matera, he would have benefited greatly from that.
Yeah, that's something Rhett Berenson, he'll talk about that a lot, as a guy who played in college, and he didn't play all his 4 years, and obviously it was a very different situation back in the 60s, but, he talked about how in the locker room when he first turned pro, guys were older than him, or guys had played, longer in juniors and whatever, and they were looking to him saying, oh, Rhett, tell us about this, tell us about that, and immediately, just because of his experience in college, people respected him as that, and, I see that with, a guy like Kevin Porter in Phoenix, writing about him a couple weeks ago. I met a lot of his teammates, and guys like Ed Jovanovski and McCulloch, guys who've been in the league a few years or many years, Olli Jokinen, they already look to him as a guy that's currently and will be a leader on that team. So I think that's something that you absolutely get from being the fourth year and taking that C at a school like Michigan.
Very, very good point. One more little stat factoid, we'll bring this in. Major statistical leaders in the NHL right now. Goals, Thomas Vanek, former Collegian, and Zach Parise is tied for second, by the way.
Don't forget Patrick Sharp.
Patrick Sharp.
University of Vermont.
Oh, that's right. Missed that one. So there you go.
And some of the best goal theme music in the NHL, the Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top.
Indeed. Save percentage, speaking of Vermont, Tim Thomas of the Boston Bruins, goals against average, former Hobie Baker winner Ryan Miller. So, Good to see all around.
goes to show that, like Bus, I think, used the term, they know their roles and they can come in and play a third line, play a fourth line. Well, they can also come in and be a star on a team, so that is always good to see. Next, I'm just going to throw it out, games to look forward to this weekend. I'll be tuned in to see New Hampshire and Minnesota on the picture color television. Looking forward to that.
I am too, and I don't know that... I guess we've kind of had this discussion when doing the power rankings. On Sunday nights, I'm not so sure that Minnesota doesn't deserve to be the number one team. I think I mentioned on the podcast a couple weeks ago or a week or so ago that, you know, I like what's going on there. They're entertaining to watch, a lot of energy.
Depth,
no question. Jordan Schroeder is phenomenal. He's just a terrific playmaker. I'm not so sure that they're not number one. You know, CC, obviously, you know, they haven't lost yet. Bachman's been sensational. I'm not so sure that, you know, their lack of offensive production concerns me a little bit. How long can you expect the goalie to, you know, keep turning in performance after performance before, you know, he has a little bit of a meltdown and the guys aren't there to pick him up offensively?
Well, I'll tell you what. With him, you can expect it for 40 games. I think the kid is spectacular. And I think with CC, it's a case where the offense will pick him up at some time. It's a give and take. And they're going to bust out a couple weeks, you know, a couple weekends or maybe a 4 out of 5 games and score that 4 or 5 goals. And they'll be fine. You and I did talk about that, and I guess we have no problem talking about it publicly here on the podcast. That we thought even with a 3-point weekend against Denver, could we move Minnesota ahead of Colorado College? And we thought about it, but for me it came down to Colorado College does have Richard Bachman. I mean, you can't say, well, what if they didn't have him? Well, guess what? They do. And he's spectacular. You know, we've heard it for so many years. Well, what are the Devils going to do if they don't have Martin Brodeur? We'll find out now. But he's played 68 games or something for the last 12 years, you know. They've always had him. It doesn't matter what they would do without him because they have him. And that, to me, is why CC stayed number one, at least in my vote.
Very good point.
A friend of mine, a very knowledgeable friend of mine who knows the WCHA, watched both of those games with CC getting a tie in Denver and then a win at home. My friend's opinion was Denver is a better team, but CC has a better goalie.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I would say the same about Minnesota.
Yeah.
And Denver and Minnesota have very, very good goaltending, but they don't have Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, Denver's goaltending concerns me a little. I'm not, you know, Chevrolet's the new guy there and taking over for Peter Menino, and I think Denver's, I think Denver could, is going to be a consistently explosive team offensively. I haven't seen a lot of Chevry other than maybe a couple games on the TV. I'm a little worried that he kind of might be one of those guys who has the occasional off night and, you know, could become an Achilles heel for this team because they're very good. I mean, Denver is very good.
He doesn't have to steal any for him.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying, you know, he's a guy that could give up 4 goals in a period.
Yeah, that's true.
And cost them. Same with Kangas. I think Kangas has looked pretty shaky.
If anyone watched the NCAA tournament last year, sadly, Peter Menino turned out to be that guy, too.
Yeah.
Well, he does have that one ring.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got one more than I do, so, you know, I'll hesitate to criticize too much, but I think any goalie can turn in that kind of performance on any given night.
Rook, how about New Hampshire heading out to Mariucci? Both teams play on the big ice, so that's kind of a wash. New Hampshire, I think, has a chance to make a name for itself and for Hockey East. Especially, it's kind of a reciprocal because North Dakota came east and Wisconsin came east that opening couple of weekends, and Hockey East kind of made a statement there. Now New Hampshire has to go on the road and hold serve, I think, that way.
Yeah, and they've got to find a way to be able to consistently score the way that they have. And, you know, we talked about this last week, but Brian Foster has been great in net, but he's not proven the way Bachman is there at CC. So you're kind of wondering how long he can keep this up. Until he puts in the entire season, but UNH has a lot of momentum. They just took 3 points from Northeastern last weekend, which is pretty huge for them. I mean, everybody is starting to anoint Northeastern as one of the top four teams in Hockey East now that Maine has fallen off again this season. And there's still some questions to be answered from UNH. Most notably, you know, can they limit the amount of shots on Foster because he's made 30-plus saves 4 times already this season. Can they get consistent goal scoring? Because they've been held to 1 or 2 goals a number of different times this season already. So it's a big test for them. They've, like I said, they're coming off a big weekend against Northeastern, and if they can go out and make some noise against Minnesota, then, I mean, that's going to really propel them heading into the Hockey East schedule once that comes around full serve.
Absolutely. Another cross-regional game on Friday, Notre Dame at Boston College in a rematch of last year's NCAA title game, as Jeff Howell learned this afternoon.
You know, I knew that they had played last season. I just couldn't remember exactly when it happened.
James, the Irish get a chance to go to Boston. How are they going along now? I think better than after a slowish start.
Yeah, you know, they're a team that has a lot of potential. They're very good defensively, and they've got some good talent with the opportunity to score offensively, but they haven't yet shown that ability to do it night in and night out. They're looking a little spotty like last season when they really struggled at certain points of the season to score goals, and obviously that's something that will be important when they go out to Boston College. They kind of got their... they kind of got whipped by Miami, swept by Miami at home a couple weekends ago, and I think that had the potential to take a lot out of them. They did go up to Northern Michigan and get a sweep in Marquette for the first time ever, but not exactly, overly convincing victories against a Northern Michigan team that's really struggled. So I think this is a big game for Notre Dame and something that if they perform well in it, they can, take that to Providence, and then as they continue on in the, fairly difficult CCHA schedule, it's going to be really important for them. But I think it'll be tough. I think it'll be
that,
tough.
That was huge for them to get those wins up in Northern.
Yeah,
huge,
yeah.
I thought. And balance. Talk about balanced scoring. Notre Dame's played 7 games, and 8 players have 5 points or more. Led by Ian Cole with 7 points through 7 games, the sophomore defenseman. So they've got the ability to win the way they won last season, and that is certainly a big positive for Notre Dame fans to count on. And people are making a big deal about Friday's game against Boston College, and rightfully so, but how about Saturday's Paul Pooley Bowl at Providence?
The Paul Pooley.
That's a big one for him too, because you don't want to have any kind of letdown. They're publicly not going to say we're out for revenge against Boston College. We want to avenge the title game loss, but obviously that's a game you're really going to get up for, and you don't want to have a letdown against Providence, because that's going to look pretty bad for their team and pretty bad for the CCHA.
Yep. Well, in one sense, yeah, they're going to want to show face a little bit and come out and beat BC. They're not going to avenge the loss. I mean, that's like It's like the Panthers coming to Foxborough in 2004 and saying we're going to, in the preseason, and saying we're going to avenge a Super Bowl loss from a few months ago. I mean, that sort of stuff is, you can say all you want and put that stock in it that you want. The one thing it'll do is it'll give them a little momentum after this weekend and saying, okay, we can play with these guys this season. It'll give them a little more confidence. They won't be able to avenge that loss. I know what you're saying. But, you know, they're going to go to Providence, and they're going to steamroll Providence. I don't know that much about Notre Dame's team this season, but I would put a lot of stock in the fact that they're a better team than Providence right now, because there are probably 40 teams in the country that are better than Providence right now.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, Providence is not so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Skating Friar, maybe, I don't know. We got to, it's got to light some candles or something. Get the boys going.
He needs to go to confession.
He's got to hear confession. All the players for danger zone turnovers and bad penalties.
A little secular humor there for you.
Forgive me, Skating Friar.
It's kind of a weird, you know, I was looking at some
where
of the matches.
I am a minus six.
I didn't know Lee Sweat played for Providence. Yeah, I was looking at some of the.
missed that. Absolutely missed that. Totally missed.
I was looking at some of the matchups this week, and it's kind of a blah week in the CCHA. I was actually looking for a game to go to this week, and you know the best I can do within driving distance is Omaha versus Western, and
pass.
Yeah, I'm gonna pass on that. although I think Omaha is kind of intriguing, but there's, you know, looking in the, again going back to the WCHA, oh, and obviously you mentioned the Cornell game against Princeton, which you know, that's a pretty important game for, you know, second game of the season or first game of the season.
Yeah. Well, you don't. You get that 22-game league schedule. You don't get a lot of chances.
No.
You know, you got to take, I mean, they're crucial.
And those are two pretty good teams. I mean,
very good teams.
Regardless,
very good teams.
Yeah, I think regardless of what conference they'd be in. I mean, there's a lot of talent on Cornell, and obviously we saw Princeton and what they could do last year. But, you know, CC has North Dakota this weekend. And I believe that's at Colorado Springs.
Yes, that's correct.
And the other one, you know, the series that kind of has my interest a little bit is Minnesota Duluth out at Denver, just because I think those two teams can put a lot of goals on the board real quick, and I think that could be, I think that could be an offensive explosion out there in Denver.
We can learn a lot, I think. We'll learn about CC and Denver, who will both be favored to win this weekend, but they come off of a big rivalry weekend last week, two top five teams playing home and home against each other. But you're coming in against some dangerous opponents who can make things miserable for you. It'll be a test of their mental focus. It'll be a test of consistency and how they respond to playing, quote-unquote, with the favorites in Vegas, I guess how Lee Corso says it. You know, they'll be the experts in Vegas, what they think. So.
Boss, you mentioned the Bulldogs. I mean, that was my big impression, seeing them last weekend for the first time in a win against St. Cloud State. This team can score goals. I haven't seen that in years. That not probably since that Frozen Four run they made 4 years ago. But
yeah, at least it's the second period of that run.
Yeah, that's right. Last 20 minutes, not so much. But
well, you know, we've got to temper this. And I was guilty of it last week's podcast, seeing UNH can't score. Well, there's a difference. UNH hasn't scored yet. And Minnesota Duluth is an offensive juggernaut. Yeah, they scored five against St. Cloud last week, but let's see how it goes over 10 to 15 games.
Interesting talking to Scott Sandlin after that game, too. 2 weeks ago, they went up to Anchorage. On Friday night, they got beat. Al Stalock, their starting goalie, faced 14 shots and four of them went in. Against St. Cloud, he allows one goal on, you know, 30-some shots. Now, if you've watched Alex Stalock or you know about him, he's the one who likes to handle the puck, likes to play like a third defenseman, likes to come way out of the crease, stuff like that. Well, Samson said the key with him is keeping him under control. So if they get 20 or fewer shots against, they actually have more trouble than if he faces 30 to 35 shots because he gets bored and has a tendency to wander if he's not seeing a lot of action back there. And that was essentially his problem up in Anchorage, at least according to the coach.
Well, maybe Sandy should treat it this way. If it's okay if you play like a defenseman, just a defenseman that blocks a lot of shots.
Maybe they should put an invisible fence collar on him.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, have one skate lace tied around the water bottle, another one to the back of his breezers.
Pretty fun. That'd like, be a great visual.
Like Goldberg in the Mighty Ducks. Just tape him to the net.
Glad you mentioned last week's podcast. Let me just say one thing. Watching that Denver CC game last Friday, which was one of the most entertaining hockey games I've seen in a long time, and definitely the most entertaining game I've seen this year. At no point after 65 minutes did I feel we need a shootout to settle this. I mean, that was
exactly.
Just a great, great standalone hockey game, and nothing would have been gained by having a breakaway drill afterwards.
Exactly. I agree with you.
So, and we don't need to go down that whole road, but I just, after we talked about that so much last week, to have such a solid reinforcement of what we said last week happened right before our eyes, I thought was great.
That third period was a shootout, wasn't it?
Yeah. Denver had 18 shots.
Well, this podcast has been chock full of actual hockey talk, which is uncharacteristic.
Yeah.
But, Jess, you provided a perfect segue to our deterioration, and I've just got one deterioration topic.
Uh-oh.
It starts with your fabulous notes from the couch on Friday as you scanned all of those games on Halloween and handed out trick-or-treat candy. But we've got to take some issue here with the dum-dums. Come on, man. Nobody wants the... I mean, you can't be the house that hands out the dum-dums. But you can be.
There was always a worse house in the town where I grew up. That was the one that gave out, like, a mini candy bar with, like, a Bible verse taped to it.
What? No way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, Jess, maybe you should measure yourself on the best house, not on the worst house. Strive to achieve.
I had the coolest pumpkin, I thought.
Well, that's good. You should have mentioned that in the blog.
Yeah. The blog, by the way, thank you for the nice words about it. It was a lot of fun, especially the first 2 hours. The last 3 hours, it dragged a little bit.
Yeah.
When you've got those permanent indentations in the shape of your rear end in the couch and thinking, boy, only another period and a half to go.
That's a lot of hockey.
That is a lot of hockey, but it was great hockey. I have no complaints about the hockey, just the duration got to be a bit much.
Actually, it wasn't
great. We
get a
lot of positive feedback on that, and we can expect more running diary-type entries in the future as the season progresses, either from the rinks or from the couch or recliner, what have you. So.
It's mentioned in my notebook this week, but I even got a call from a WCHA coach who had obviously read the blog and took issue with something I wrote. So, I made amends.
So it's not just the fans who are uptight.
No, but I mean, I think that gives you an indication of how much assistant coaches have to do on a daily basis.
All right. Plus, you made a
address.
Good call. You're gonna
what's that?
Yeah. I'm getting another nasty call on that one, I'm sure.
If you you made a good call. If you're handing out suckers or lollipops, what have you, based on your regional dialect?
I think the hierarchy, in my mind, is
blow pops.
Blow pop, Tootsie pop.
Tootsie Pop. That's it. That's as far as you can go.
You know what, though?
I made up for it in quantity, though, because I was giving each kid like three or four of them. So.
Well, that's three or four things that suck.
Although it doesn't...
Hence the name, Sucker. Hello.
Touché. Do the Dum Dums have the cream soda flavor?
I think they do. Oh. The green apple are the bomb. I mean, that's what you're playing for. That's why you're out there. That's, I may have.
Welcome to 90.
Sorry, go on.
They're rad.
Killer.
Gnarly. Totally awesome.
I don't even know if I could have pulled that off.
Okay, Rook, then what's the replacement for the bomb?
I don't think you can say that on a podcast.
Yeah.
My street cred just got shot all the heck.
All that street cred that you have flowing out of you.
That street isn't even paved.
Bubbling over. Bubbling over.
Street dirt.
Are we talking about my hometown again?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? The other candy on a stick that was good, I liked when I was a kid, was a Sugar Daddy. Those caramels.
Oh, I hated the Sugar Daddy.
Those were awesome.
Oh, that was... Ugh.
Awesome.
The Sugar Daddies... That was like
paste with sugar in it.
The only thing
delicious,
that...
Delicious paste with sugar.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing is, you know, you'd kind of leave the thing in your mouth for a little too long. You know, you're kind of getting all the caramely goodness off of it, and then next thing you know, you feel like you're going to rip one of your fillings out because the dang thing is stuck in your teeth.
Oh, yeah. Thing gets locked in. It doesn't let go.
And it looks like some sort of... You can finally get it out, and it looks like some sort of fossilized imprint in the caramel.
If you do it right, you could probably get away with using them as mouth guards for an entire hockey season.
Boil it in some water.
Soften it up, chew down on it, let it go, throw it in the freezer. Voila.
That ad we were negotiating for with the American Dental Association, they just hung up.
Just saying.
Why wouldn't the American Dental Association like caramel mouth guards?
Put sugary candy in your mouth all day. Yeah, that can't be bad for you.
It's good for the dental business.
Good for business.
It is. It is very good for business.
Rook, your favorite Halloween candy or any candy?
I'm not a big candy guy, but I'm not going to. I like Reese's.
Those are good. That's good. James?
I'm kind of a big fan of peanut butter as well, so Reese's is what I would say.
Good deal.
Wow.
Tootsie Pops are pretty good.
We had this discussion. We were talking about the Nestle Crunch Bar.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. Huge fan.
What's good is a Nutrageous. I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay.
I'm more of a Three Musketeers guy myself.
Three Musketeers for Jess. There you go.
Whatever Kyle Busch happens to have on his car, that's what I go for.
Yeah, M&M's are classic. Those don't ever go out of style.
Yeah, no, M&M's are outstanding.
Need the ones with the peanuts.
Yeah.
I'm a non-peanut M&M guy.
Well, I wouldn't turn them down. I would say that if given the preference, I would take the peanut.
Yeah, I would take the plane.
Like everything, though, they go overboard. Like when they did the almond M&Ms. I mean, what's that?
Hey, those are pretty good.
It's either plain or peanut. Don't mix it up.
Someone.
The peanut butter ones are all right.
Yeah, those are okay. Those are
also good. Known as Reese's Pieces.
I actually like the M&M version better than the Reese's Pieces one.
Yeah, they're
Here's my question. Does anybody like dark chocolate?
Oh, I do.
Really?
Love it.
Absolutely.
I don't know anybody that... Well, now I know a couple people that like it.
Eastern bias.
Yeah, it's clearly an East Coast thing.
Eastern bias toward dark chocolate.
In the Midwest, we eat anything that has milk in the title, so we don't like dark chocolate.
Unless it's deep fried. And on a stick.
Someone tried offering me a Hershey's Kiss last week that was a candy corn in disguise. I almost went all Amy Fisher on her.
I can't say the bomb, but we can make Amy Fisher references, for God's sake. Wow.
I'm going to have to agree. You need to go to the basement.
Amy Fisher, my God.
Amy Fisher.
Rook, not down with the candy corn. I never minded that. I kind of like the candy corn.
No, I picked up a bag. I picked up a bag of candy corn.
Oh, boy.
A while back.
Real quick. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Amy Fisher.
Amy Fisher,
right.
Who? Good. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting cow.
Now this is classic deterioration, baby.
All right, man. If you don't know the end of the interrupting cow knock knock joke, then you're gonna have to learn it somewhere else.
Send a dollar.
You're no friend of ours.
Inside college hockey.
Guy walks into a library.
Great.
Wow.
Okay, that'll just about do it for the Inside College Hockey podcast. We'd like to thank James V. Dow, Jess Myers, Mike Eidelbiss, Jeff Howe, and my name is Joe Gladyszewski. Keep following our notebook throughout the week. Make sure you sign up for Inch Pick'em. We'll have a Thursday afternoon chat at ESPN.com, as always, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Enjoy the games at your rinks this weekend.